serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Thank you for tuning in for this Unity Partner Program. Unity Online Radio partners with spiritual leaders from organizations whose mission and messages complement Unity's. We are pleased to bring you this program on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Divinely Inspired Living with award-winning author Deborah Moffat. For a light-hearted exploration of life, love, and relationships. Here's Deborah.
Welcome to Divine Inspired Living. This is Deborah Moffat, inspiring you to trust your inner wisdom through conversations with people who live with purpose and passion. So, what's wrong with Cinderella? You know, stories shape our lives, and Cinderella has, and other fairy tales have created the foundations for the way we relate to ourselves, for the way we relate to others. And to talk with us today about the depths and what the messages behind the story and other fairy tales, and to take us more deeply into relationships, is Dr. Rian Eisler, who is the author of Sacred Pleasure, Sex, Myth, and the Politics of the Body, New Path to Power and Love. She's also the author of The Power Partnership and The Chalice and the Blade, and she's going to be exploring with us the deeper messages in fairy tales and how they reduce our self-esteem, make us identify with the victim, and also how give us the impression that the only way out for women is to be saved by a sort of Prince Charming. Welcome to the show, Rian.
Pleasure to be with you, as always.
So, Rian Eisler is one of, in my opinion, one of the great thought leaders of today, and your books are really incredible, Rian. So, help us to move more deeply into this exploration of Cinderella, and what is really behind this story of Cinderella?
Well, what's behind the story of Cinderella is what I call a domination model of relations. You know, we talk about accessing our inner wisdom, but have you noticed how in these fairy tales that we tell children, really before their mental faculties, critical faculties, brains are fully formed, the older women are either witches or evil stepmothers. So the wisdom of women, of older women, is simply not to be trusted, right? That's a very subtle, nasty little message that creeps in there. Why? Because it's only men, according to this old paradigm of domination, be it man over man over woman, race over race, religion over religion, a man over nature, that we're trying to leave behind, really only men, and as you see in the fairy tales, quote, superior men, right? Princes, kings, not the common people. They're the only ones who are supposed to have the wisdom and the power.
And, of course, the stories teach girls to be passive, right? I mean, Cinderella is in this deep misery, but she has no ideas or no reactions to get out of it, right? She's oppressed by her stepsisters and her stepmother.
Oh, well, you know, it's so interesting because here is this young woman who is really idealized in this story, but what is she idealized for? I mean, aside from being able to fit into the prince's slipper, only for looking good in clothes that her godmother gives her, she has absolutely no, she's a drudge. She doesn't object to injustice. She accepts it. Her father, by the way, is never blamed for any of this. It's just the stepmother. Have you noticed that he, you know, why doesn't he stand up for his daughter, right?
Good question.
But that's not even in the story. But, you know, Cinderella is one of a whole panoply of heroines. I mean, Sleeping Beauty, she can't even wake up without the prince. you know, waking her up, right? She can't mm-hmm. even do that by herself. So it's a way of really telling women at our deepest, deepest level, we are supposed to have no independence, no agency. All that we are really supposed to be are these good-looking, passive objects.
You know, it's interesting because as I did some research on the on the original Cinderella story, it goes way back to Naples in Italy, and I believe it dates back to around the 1500s, and there are different versions in different cultures as well, which is very interesting, and it really plays into, it disempowers women, and it plays into the victim mentality. We need a man to save us, is the message.
To save us from other men. I mean, it's really all so convoluted, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's interesting that it goes back, way back, to times when the domination system was much more entrenched than it is today. I mean, fortunately, even Disney has been prevailed upon to now, in some of these stories, have some strong women who have agency, who think for themselves, who are able to solve problems. None of this is granted to the women in the old fairy tales. So I think parents really don't seem to understand what they're doing to their children. And of course, as far as boys go, if they're told these stories, what they learn is that the only thing important about a girl is how she looks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that she be docile. And
yes.
that she not have a mind of her own. And that she be malleable and pliable. And of course, what it makes for are terrible relationships, doesn't it?
Yes, and it disturbs both men's and women's psyches, as you said.
Yeah. So these are very poisonous tales. It's not the apple in Snow White's hands from, again, the evil stepmother, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the older woman who's bad. Don't take her advice. Don't even look to her for any advice. Once I started to analyze these, it was like, oh my gosh, what have we been telling our children and what have we been telling ourselves? Because, as I said, we tell these stories to children before their brains are fully formed. And yes, before their critical faculties are there. So that's very dangerous stuff, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it's so prevalent still today in our culture that there is a sense of so many women feel like they have to have that Prince Charming to have security and happiness and not really rely on their own inner power and their inner abilities for those things.
Well, it's a catch-22, isn't it? In a society where women were really denied any access to economic resources, to power, to prestige, status, control, they were dependent on men. But we're trying to dig out from this, and in at least in the West, and there are people even in some of the regions of the world where the subordination of women is still so brutal sometimes and so severe, there are women who are saying, wait a minute, I don't want to do this. I want to be a human being.
Mm.
Just like a man. You know, in Sacred Pleasure, you probably noticed that I also talk about the Scheherazade story, and that's a vicious story. It's idealized that this is this romantic tale, but think about what it's about. It's about a serial sex killer who is sort of lulled into not doing this by the tales of this smart young woman, who of course is saving countless female lives, right? And what is the happy ending of this darn story? Well, she gets to live in the harem of this guy who isn't even called, I mean, punished. There's no punishment. He's rewarded, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a horrible story. And what it is, it's a morality tale about absolute male power. And indeed, it comes out of a region where, unfortunately, in much of the Middle East, Iran, etc., absolute male power is still considered a man's honor, right? So much so that his whole family will back him if he kills, murders a woman in his family who is accused of sexual agency, even marrying somebody without his permission.
Mm.
So these things reflect realities, but perpetuate realities. And it's very important that we not only understand them, but that we change them.
So much of your writing, Rianne, is around these two models of dominator and partnership, ways of dealing in relationships with ourselves, with intimates, and with the society at large. When we look at things like the recent books and the popularity of 50 Shades of Grey, what are your reflections about that?
Well, I think it's, again, a very regressive tale, isn't it? About female masochism and having pleasure out of pain. You know, there's something, I mean, even as you say the words, right? There's something sick about it, isn't it? But the fact that it still appeals to so many women tells us something, doesn't it? And of course, it's directly related, isn't it, to the fairy tales. You know, I mean, Cinderella is idealized because she, you know, I mean, she lived in pain and got rescued by this guy. It's really a convoluted mess. Now, to me, as you said, discovering these two models for relations and for social institutions, family, education, religion, politics, economics, was very, very empowering. And I receive an enormous amount of mail, emails, etc., from people who tell me how empowering it is to them. And when I first really understood these configurations, you know, that we don't have to be stuck in a system where our only alternatives are either dominating or being dominated, I also, as you know, started to explore our deep past, as well as cross-cultural society, you know, cross-culturally looking at societies which are more partnership-oriented even today. And what I found, and this is something I trace in Sacred Pleasure, is that in earlier, more partnership-oriented societies, women's bodies, our sexuality, our capacity to give life, they weren't debased, considered dirty, considered just there, you know, to be used and exploited somehow, but that they were considered really part of the sacred fabric of life-giving, of pleasure-giving. And it was fascinating to me to trace, as I do in Sacred Pleasure, the evolution of how women and relationships, romantic relationships, I start the book by saying that candles and flowers, these are really part of our most sacred rites, aren't they? Mm-hmm. And yet they're also part of romantic relations. So why is there this commonality why do we in spirituality talk about passion as well as in romantic relations? And of course, I trace it back to a time when the two had not yet been split asunder, before the domination system, before the shift of the domination system. And that was also very empowering.
There's also a very interesting exploration that you take us through about associating pleasure, physical pleasure, with pain, sexual pleasure with pain, which has been really, it was really interesting to see that exploration historically.
Well, the erotization of domination and violence,
yes,
is really a way, again, of unconsciously conditioning us to function in domination relations, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And this, I mean, there have been so many studies, some of which I have in the book, but just common sense. I mean, if we are conditioned to associate being dominated or dominating with sexual arousal, that's really conditions us, doesn't it? On just as childhood, what happens to us or what we observe and experience in childhood, that keeps conditioning us, doesn't it, for relations of domination and submission.
Mm-hmm. Rather than a truly sacred partnership.
Well, and you know what's so interesting is that studies show, as I write in Sacred Pleasure, that actually sex is much more exciting and satisfying for both women and men when women ask what they want, when women are sexually also agents. And, you know, it makes sense, doesn't it? Because, mm-hmm. look, the domination system is really held together. I mean, it's always a matter of degree, but what ultimately holds it together is pain or the fear of pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas partnership systems at all levels are held together much more by pleasure, the sharing, the giving and receiving of pleasure, whether it's the sharing of food with others, whether it's the sharing of sexual pleasure with others, it's a mutuality. And we know that all of us really flourish much more in these kinds of relations, both men and women.
Mm-hmm. And it also values emotional connection and affection over fear-based relationships, as you had said.
Well, we have this human yearning for caring connection, don't we? It's our most basic yearning. In fact, it starts when we're born, because we can't even survive, can we?
Mm-hmm.
Without caring connection of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in domination systems, whether it's in highly punitive, abusive, rigidly male-dominated, although women can also take that role of being the dominator. Because remember, you know, there's only two alternatives in that model. You either dominate or you're dominated. I mean, children really learn that that's the only alternative, you know? Whereas in a more partnership-oriented family, and that's why I really think that we have to pay much more attention to family, and that this is actually a political issue that pushing us back to the acceptance of the old, quote, traditional family, or the old, quote, traditional male-female sexual relations where the man is entitled to grope and to appropriate. The body of woman is just there for him. It gets us into really very bad political situations, as we see today in the United States with what happened I mean, that's kind of a real illustration of how deep this conditioning still is, that people could vote for a president who groped women, who assaulted women, really, which is a crime, and still got elected.
Mm. It's deeply ingrained in cultures around the world.
Yes. And I'm glad you said that, because we, of course, tend to be most critical of our own culture. But my work, and I've done so much work, really I've pioneered the integration of women's rights and children's rights into both human rights theory and action. There's a huge correlation between rigid, brutal domination systems like ISIS, for example, and the subordination of women and these very, very punitive approaches to child rearing. And we better understand that, because the people pushing us back, whether it's here in this country or whether it's in other world regions, they understand how fundamental these relations are. Politics.
Mm. And I think so many people don't understand how such a short time ago women did not have access to property even, or, you know, the right to vote wasn't allowed in Switzerland until the 1970s, I believe, the early 1970s. So, you know, these are things that a lot of people don't really remember, don't really recognize, but they're deeply in our cultures in many, many ways. So, Rianne, are there any stories, current stories, that empower women and that play more into partnership?
Well, there are many of them today, thank goodness. I mean, when I look at some of the children's stories that are popular today, and I can't really think of any titles right off the top of my head, because my children have their own children now. So my grandchildren are beyond the early childhood stage. But there are many stories that have spunky, powerful girl heroines. There are many stories that really tell us about how the benefits of caring connection. As a matter of fact, on one of our websites, on centerforpartnership.org, if you go to education, there's a whole list of stories that somebody compiled that I just remembered that might be of interest and of use to listeners. But it's up to us, you know, to change the stories. And I wrote many things, but one is a workbook for both The Chalice and the Blade and Sacred Pleasure called The Partnership Way that I wrote with my wonderful partner and husband, David Loy. And it has an exercise that I can really recommend. It's being used in schools, but can be used by anybody, which is to have kids watch television, keeping in mind the difference between partnership heroes and heroines and domination heroes and heroines. And it starts actually with something really subliminal that continues, which is that if you look at the ratio of male to female in children's programs, it's 2-to-1, male to female.
Wow.
Yeah, and it continues to be that still in general television. So what is the message about who's important here subliminally?
That's interesting. You know, when I think about it, Brave is a really good animated film for where there's a female character. Actually, there's several female characters. And I'm also thinking, you know, as I think about all the James Bond films, they show absolutely all of this dominator mentality perfectly, don't they? Women are victims and they need to be saved, and they're dressed in these incredibly seductive, I mean, their appearance is above all the thing that's most important.
Or they're the villain, they're the evil, you know, woman. I mean, you know, the stereotypes, and Jung, of course, perpetuated them, the psychologist Jung, you know. I mean, woman is either the Holy Virgin, right? Or as man's enemy, you know, his temptation. And it doesn't give women any identity as themselves. It's sort of weird when you think about it. I mean, there's so much, and this is why it's such an exciting time to live in for both women and men, because we're beginning to wake up, you know, like Sleeping Beauty, like from a long drugged sleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
To really see that this domination system has kept us in what I call a dominator trance. And that when we wake up, there's so many wonderful, exciting things to discover, not only to deconstruct what we have inherited from earlier times, you know, after the shift to the domination system, when things were brutal. I mean, you know, man over man over woman, et cetera, et cetera. But about alternatives, where we're finding that we can use our creativity, as you say, in the story of Brave and in other stories, and we need those so badly. So and we need the cartoons, we need the children's stories, and we need the stories for adults, too.
Definitely. Dr. Rianne Eisler, thank you so, so much. So people can find you at Dr. Rianne Eisler or RianneEisler.com, I believe.
That's right, RianneEisler.com. They can also find out about my work and the Center for Partnership Studies at centerforpartnership.org.
Thank you so, so much. I really appreciate your wisdom. And thank you to our listeners for listening. This is Deborah Moffat. You can find more about my work and my books at deborahmoffat.com, DeborahMoffitt.com. Thank you so much. See you next week.
You've been listening to award-winning author Deborah Moffat on Divinely Inspired Living. To find out more, deborahmoffat.com.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
Peace in the presence of conflict. Love in the presence of hatred. Forgiveness in the presence of injury. These words are easy to say. It's challenging, though, to live them in everyday life. After all, I can make my words and actions peaceful, but I have no control over the words and actions of others. That's true, but think about it. If you, then I, then others, one by one, responded in love in every situation, the effect would be like the wave you see spread across a sports stadium. It would go on and on, gaining momentum as it moved through the people around us. I can let peace begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Are you ready to live in joy? Is there an area of your life where you could use a miracle? Have you been praying for help and guidance? Come join Lisa and Bill and their guests for an hour filled with practical tips on experiencing miracles, greater abundance, focused, deliberate living, and the peace of God that passeth all understanding. Experience more joy in life. Listen to Living in Joy, Reflections on A Course in Miracles with Lisa Natoli and Bill Free every Friday at 2 p.m. Central here on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.